I take over? Did you have anything, any questions when you were reading today? Did you read today? You were so lively last week, you're so dead right now. Anything? Okay, I know karma does that to people. Nothing else really does it like karma, though. Okay. Well, then I'm on my own, I guess. Okay. Continue our little, not our little cycle, it's our major cosmic cycle here, of this, the way this book is structured, and it gets very interesting right here. We went through that whole section, the law of karma, the law of life is joy, sin is ignorance of the law of life, which sets up karmic problems, which causes us to have to reincarnate. And then we come to the question of how do we avoid having to reincarnate? How do we work out our karma in other ways? And so then Master gets into the real questions here, which is, do we save ourselves by our own efforts? Or does God's grace save us and we are just passive and all we have to do is believe? And he addresses that issue, and that's the first one we'll talk about. Then that leads us, once he persuades us that some kind of effort is required, that what we need is the practice of yoga, which is what is the right kind of effort that really puts us into the flow of grace. And then he goes all the way to Kriya Yoga. And then, of course, we go to the next class, we go to the end, the need for a guru. So one of the things that we often talk about when we try to define for people what this path of self-realization is, which is probably some of you in your experiences with your friends and family, people ask you questions about what is it that you're really doing. And I know for years a person becomes quite tongue-tied at that question. And aren't you just like the Buddhists, people will often say, or isn't this just like that? And you just get kind of mixed up. Aren't you just like the Unity Church? Aren't you just like the Science of Religion? And we're, of course, more like many things than we are not like them. But still, there are certain sort of salient issues that help define it. And it's not just for the sake of being able to have conversation with people who want to understand. It's much more for being able to draw the issues to a clear focus within ourselves so that we know what we're doing. And one of the issues, one of the defining realities of the path of self-realization is a clear understanding of this question of self-effort and grace. Even though it's not necessarily something that we address all that often, it really becomes very central in ways that we'll talk about tonight that you can help understand. First of all, there's the contrast, which Master himself says in this book. All I ever hear about in this country is people talking about being saved by the power of grace and quoting from the Bible, you're saved by grace, not by your own efforts, not by works, but by grace, lest any man become proud. I mean, these are words that if you're in those traditions, you hear all the time. And let me just try to think how to put this. And on the opposite side of the coin, you often have this idea of yoga, which is understood by people to mean that God plays very little part in it, that I just control myself, I watch my mind, I discipline my energy, I perhaps do my practices, and it becomes very much about the efforts that I'm making. And one of the characteristics of Paramahansa Yogananda's expression of self-realization is that it's a very devotional path. And it's devotional. There's a very strong sense in this teaching of a power greater than ourselves that we're trying to cooperate with. I have gotten myself into something on Thursday night, which is, we posted it up in the community room, that I'm on this panel of a program sponsored by the Atheists of Silicon Valley. I am totally embarrassed to be part of this program. In fact, when David cut it out of the newspaper, I didn't want him to post it. He pointed out that the date was left out of the newspaper article, which I consider to be the grace of God. But I'm not representing the atheists, as you can well imagine. You know, the word atheist to me, I have trouble hearing that word. It sounds to me like a swear word. I mean, I know that's very narrow of me, but it sounds like a bad word to me, because it just seems like such an unfortunate attitude to have, to have cut yourself off from the idea of a greater reality. Of course, I'm not stupid. I know that many atheists are better people than many so-called Christians. But nonetheless, I've developed a not a happy relationship with the idea of atheism. And so it's based upon, why am I talking about this? Oh, I know. But anyway, because I'm nervous about it, that's what I'm talking about. It's based on the decision made about the pledge, the Pledge of Allegiance, to take out the under God clause. In fact, the man who was the plaintiff in that suit is actually going to speak, right? And so everybody's very excited about this. Of course, it subsequently came out that he didn't have custody of that child, and the child didn't want to have anything to do with it, so he lacked standing to sue, as my attorney friends put it, so the whole thing will probably be thrown out simply on that basis, because the whole case was a fake. He had no grounds to file a lawsuit. But because of that, there's this, you know, going to be this discussion, and I will be representing Self-Realization. A man from the Baha'i faith will be there, a pastor from the so-and-so Bible college, whose position is actually the closest to mine, I think, in this whole thing, and some member of a Presbyterian church who's actually seems to be more on the atheist side than anything else. I'm totally confused as to what I will say. I finally realized the reason I don't want anybody to know is because I don't have any confidence. I think it's going to be a disaster. Yes? No, it's not on television. It's a public forum. Yeah, 7:30. You can go, but God knows you don't want to. But why am I doing it? Because this... because I don't know why I'm doing it. Because I was in Seattle when the call came through, and the woman who called me, I liked her. She was very bright. She was very cheerful. Then I began to feel really uncomfortable, so I called up and tried to get out of it, and she just sort of persuaded me that I had to do it. I said, how does somebody as nice as sounding as you ever get into anything like this? And what she essentially told me is that she grew up in a very oppressive, dogmatic religious tradition, and when she began to think for herself, she rejected it, which is not the same as being an atheist. So unfortunately, you see, as the more I talked to her, the more I persuaded her that I had something to say, because the more we discussed, the more she wanted me to come and say it. So there you have it. Yes, now I do have a point, and I will bring it back. Yes, Steve?
I think there's a great need for what you're doing.
Well, yes, that could be obvious, isn't it?
I've heard a lot of discussions about this issue, and so many people who are atheists have had this upbringing, apparently, of some dogmatic Christianity, and it's their only concept of God, and they don't know at all what we know.
Right, they don't know at all what we know, and that's probably why I said yes originally. But I felt, I mean, I have to use the actual word, I feel unclean being associated with it. I feel demeaned by sort of being there. Maybe I'm exaggerated. I do have an exaggerated sense of these things. So I'm just hoping for the best. Just sort of to be with all these people touting all these positions and philosophies that hurt my heart to hear them. You know, I was in a situation once. It was a very peculiar situation. Somehow this will come back to the book. I was in a very... When David and I were traveling once after our India pilgrimage, we went to Europe, and we were traveling around Austria, and we went to Vienna. And we thought, well, maybe we can hear the Vienna Boys Choir. And we found out that one of the ways that people go to hear the Vienna Boys Choir is you go to the particular church where they are the actual choir. And so, unfortunately for the poor priests there, the church is entirely filled with tourists who are there to hear the boys' choir. They don't really care anything about the Mass or anything like that. And the priest has this sort of dogged, defeated look on his face because of that. And he tries to give communion, and he tries to carry it on like a regular service, but people are there as if it were a concert, including us. Except at least we're more devotional than some. Of course, the fact that it was in German didn't help us really tune in, but... So I ended up taking communion because, even though we're technically not supposed to, I always feel that I am empowered by God to take communion, so it's fine. So he was trying to discuss with me in German whether or not I was really a legitimate person to be able to take it. And I didn't know what he was saying, and he finally just helplessly gave me the wafer. He didn't know what else to do. But that was all the fun part of it. I also had a very profound revelation there, which was wonderful. Because it was Jesus was on the cross, of course, as he always is, often is, But there was something about this particular cross that I became aware of the fact that whereas one usually sees him hanging there, in this particular crucifix he seemed to be standing there. And it was very, very dynamic, because he was standing just like that, which is really a very powerful position. You're totally unprotected. You're welcoming your heart first. And there was just a lot of power in it. So it gave me not all crucifix look like that, but this particular one really looked like that. But there was a couple there. And they were from Australia, and they were on their honeymoon because they were speaking English, and they were very brash, and they were very close to us. And when the communion started, they had lifesavers, and they were pretending to give each other communion with lifesavers. But they were mocking the sacred. You know, they were mocking the sacred. And I so wanted to say to them, don't do that. You know, you've just started your married life. I really felt, and I seldom feel things like that. I felt they were going to be cursed. Because blasphemy is, every sin is forgiven except the sin against the Holy Ghost. That's how it says in the Bible. And Yogananda's definition of that is not that God is mad at you. And that's what Master talks about. This whole concept of grace is so distorted because it's based on this idea that you have God somewhere keeping score. And if you just propitiate him, as Master used to say, like some spoiled lady, and kind of get him on your side with enough flattery, then he'll okay and grant your wishes. So when you hear that all sins are forgiven but the sin against the Holy Ghost, you think, well, what does that really mean? But what Master said that meant is that you can recover from everything except when you just deny the presence of Spirit within you. If you deny the presence of Spirit within you, where can you go from there? And it's not that any outside force forgives you, it's that you cut yourself off from the very source of your own reality. And then what are you going to do? You're just going to be totally isolated without any awareness of a higher power to help you, or that you can tune into, or that you can be a channel for. You don't have to have any theology. And so the sin against the Holy Ghost is not my denying your religious faith. It's truly inside myself, oneself, behaving as if there were no spirit, there were no divinity. And that's true blasphemy. And that's what, in the consciousness of these people, which was palpable somehow. I mean, externally, they were just ordinary people. I've never forgotten it. And it just gave me chills when I saw them behaving that way. And I still think about them, and I pray for them, and I wonder, you know, if indeed some terrible thing did befall them, or if they got away with it. But you mock such things at your peril. Because even though I'm certainly not much for ritualized religion, great saints like Teresa Neumann and others they greatly respect that communion wafer. Teresa Neumann, the saint that Master writes about in Autobiography of a Yogi, who never ate for 30 years, she never ate or drank anything except she would take a communion wafer. But if it was not consecrated, she wasn't able to take it. Because then it was a piece of bread and she couldn't eat it. And no matter how they would try to trick her, she could always tell if it was consecrated or not, because something had actually happened to it. So all of our sort of sophisticated rejection of all of these things, we can reject all we want, but we don't necessarily have the perspective to know what this is really all about. And that's sort of what I felt when I saw that couple. You don't know, you're making fun of something. You have no idea what you're talking about. You don't realize the powerful descent of spirit. And you can't just live in this world and act as if it doesn't exist. Worse still, if you act as if it doesn't exist, you're just ignorant. If you mock it, then you have stepped over on the other side. You're denying its reality altogether. And so in this context of what we're talking about today, the grace of God, Master is really trying to get us to understand what that grace really is. Because too much is made of it in the wrong way in some teachings. Swamiji talks about how presumptuous it is to declare yourself saved. I recall reading in the Reader's Digest, this woman said she traveled all over the world by herself. Or perhaps it was all over the country by herself. And someone asked, well, you know, weren't you afraid? What happens when people you didn't want to relate to or try to relate to. Oh, she said, I just protected myself with three little words. She said, whenever strangers would sit down to talk to me, I would say, are you saved? And she said, it usually just caused them to walk away. But Swamiji has often talked about how presumptuous it is to declare ourselves saved. In the sense, do we actually have the power to say that we are saved? We may say that we have given our lives to the quest for salvation. We may say that we believe that Jesus or whomever has the power to save us. But to declare that I am worthy of salvation, is that my decision? Or is it God's decision? There's an interesting phrase that often appears in Master's writings. We'll refer to God-known saints. Not merely God-knowing saints, but God-known. As if that God reads the heart. And Master even says in this book, which comforts me for my adventure in 2 days, some atheists are really better Christians than some Christians because they live more according to the teachings of Jesus. But then Master goes on to say, but it would be better if they had the belief in God, because then they could consciously work toward attunement with that. And so we sort of have to play out this game, which is, a game is not the right word. We have to work through the levels of reality that we actually live on. Now, we can study Vedanta philosophy, which is the philosophy of India that talks about the oneness of all things, that we are one with the infinite ocean and so on. In earlier classes, we've talked about the difference between saying that, you know, the ocean is me, or that I have become one with the ocean. If we claim all of infinity to be part of us, when the pronouns we're using in our own understanding really relate just to the little ego, it becomes presumption and it becomes very confusing. So even though we may know that the wave that I experience as my own self is really just an expression of the whole ocean, on a day-to-day basis, that may not be our actual state of realization. And in order to actually attain that realization, we have to follow certain steps that have been proven that will expand our awareness in that way. And so we this idea of the grace of God coming in and helping us is no mere sentiment. It's actually the way we experience things. All of us, if we're honest to our experience, and because I'm thinking a lot about Thursday night, this week for me is this class tonight and that program on Thursday and then Linda Gerber's memorial service on Saturday and then the Sunday service. So I'm just basically playing tiddlywinks all day, just sort of like passing the time between these because all of them are swimming around in my head. But I keep thinking about this sort of atheist picture here. Now, where was I talking about that? I lost it. What was I saying?